Vayomer Hineini, he says, yes, here I am. Vayomer, and he says, Al tishlach yadcha l'nar, don't send your hand to the young one. Val tasle mumma, don't do anything to him. Ki ata yadaiti, now I know, ki yireh l'kimata, now I know that you fear God. L'chasachta as binchas yichidcha meni, you have not withheld your son from me. And it's a beautiful story in the Talmud that highlights this idea, as the Alter Rebbe explains it in Torah Ur and Parshas Toldos. The Talmud tells a very puzzling story. The great sages of the Talmud, of the Mishnah, Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion was teaching. Hanina ben Tradion was the father-in-law of Rabbi Meir. His daughter was the famous Bruria. So Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion was teaching Torah in public. He was one of the 10 martyrs who were murdered, brutally murdered by the Romans after the destruction of the Second Temple. So he was teaching Torah in public, and his friend saw him, I think it was Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma, and he says, what are you doing? You're going to be arrested. You're going to get killed. You're going to get yourself killed. It's forbidden. So Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion says, Hashem will help. God will help. So his friend, his colleague responded, I don't understand. I'm talking to you logic, and you're telling me God will help. I mean, you're endangering your life. What are you doing? It's like suicidal. What are you doing? So he changes the topic of the conversation. He said, listen, if I'm going to die, let me ask you. I'm going to continue teaching, and I'm going to die. Okay, so let me ask you. Do I have a share in the world to come, or don't I have a share in the world to come? Interesting question. If he doesn't have a share in the world to come, someone who risks his life to publicly teach Torah, who exactly does have a share in the world to come? And instead of laughing at his question, he took his question very seriously. So he says, let me ask you, do you have any positive good deeds that you've done in your life? He's thinking. He says, yes, I remember last Purim, you have the four mitzvot. You have to hear the Megillah, and you have to eat and drink, or get drunk. You have to exchange, give a friend two food items. And you have to give gifts to the poor, to at least two poor people. So I set aside money to the poor people, and I set aside funds to give the poor people, and I set aside funds for the special Purim meal, which has to be more joyous than any other holiday. You have to eat and drink and be merry until you get drunk. So I set aside funds for the meal, and I set aside funds for the poor people. By mistake, when I gave the funds to the poor people, I gave them the wrong funds. I gave them from the funds that I set aside for the meal. So legally, by right, I could have just said, hey, you know, I made a mistake. Let me switch funds. The funds that I put away for the poor people, let me use it now for the meal. Instead, I said, you know what? I'll just give double the funds for the poor. And I took other funds to pay for my meal. So his friend, his colleague heard this. He says, oh, if that's the case, you have a share in the world to come. I mean, this is the most puzzling story in the Talmud. He doubts he has a share in the world to come. Do I have any good deeds? Really? One of the greatest sages in the Talmud? Do you have good? His whole life is good deeds. And then he thinks of something that happened on Purim. I mean, what's going on here? So Alter Rebbe explains, based on what we just read, this verse. Rabbi Hanina ben Tradion, of course he knew that he was a sage and knew that he was teaching Torah, studying Torah. His whole life was Torah. He was publicly teaching Torah, risked his life to teach Torah. But he was questioning. His question was, what is my motivation? Is it a godly motivation? A purely godly motivation or not? There are many non-Jews who forsake a life of pleasure, forsake a life of money, power, fame, and pursue a life of thinking, of studying, of, you know, think tanks, professors. I mean, their whole life is just to think and to write and to teach and to... They just love to learn. Aristotle was part of the royal family. He gave it all up. He didn't care about palaces and power and extreme wealth. He cared about philosophy. That's all he cared about. And he dedicated his life to philosophy. Were there any godly intention involved? No. It was purely natural. There are people who receive pleasure from thinking. All the pleasures in the world, Don't come close to the pleasure of figuring things out. A pure scientist who's in it just for the science, for the understanding, for the discoveries and figuring things out, that's what he lives for. So amongst the Jewish people, you can also have someone who by nature is a bookworm, who's an introvert. He's not an extrovert. He couldn't care less about, you know, he doesn't live for the parties and for the clubbing. And his whole life is he loves to learn and to read, his nose in the books. And that's what he cares about. So just because he ended up being a Torah scholar, a giant of a Torah scholar, and his whole life was dedicated to learning and to teaching, how do I know that his motivation is pure and godly? Maybe it's ego motivation. That's what his question was. He asked, do I have a share in the world to come? In the world of truth, where everything depends on the motivation and the purity of the motivation, am I really connected with godliness? So he said, it's a good question. Tell me something about yourself. So when he told him the story of Purim, that story revealed that by nature, Rabbi Hanina ben Tradian was not an introvert. By nature, he was an extrovert. Because someone who's an introvert by nature, someone who's conservative by nature, is very calculating. Everything has to be precise. Not because they're stingy, because everything has to be correct. So if I set aside money for the meal, the money goes for the meal. If I set aside money for the poor person, that goes for the poor person. And if by mistake I'm confused and mix them up, by right, I should take the money that I set aside for the poor person and use it now for the meal. And that would be my right. But he said, no, you know what? He was very generous, very easily. He said, no, let's just give the poor person, let's just give him double. And I'll use other funds for the meal. Which revealed that by nature, he was an extrovert. And yet he dedicated his life to study Torah, to have his nose in the book, to study, to learn, to teach, to communicate, even risking his life to teach. So that proved that his motivation was pure. He was only doing it for Hashem. And that's why he's guaranteed a share in the world to come. And immediately after, he was martyred. Right after that dialogue, that discussion, he was caught studying Torah and he was dialogue and he was burnt alive. That's the point of the Akedah. The point that Hashem says, now I know that you fear God. For 137 years, I know that you love God. But now this shows that he also feared God. That Avram, everything that he did till now wasn't just because this is his nature, his ego nature. He's a liberal person by nature, kind person by nature. And he loves doing kindness. No, it was a purely godly motivation. And therefore, if this is what Hashem wanted at this moment, the same Avram, who for us is the source of love, now Avraham became the source of self-sacrifice, of being in awe of Hashem. Not only was Avram the source of love of Hashem, but he became the source of this heroic self-sacrifice, the ability that the Jew has, every Jew has, that we inherit from Avram, to self-sacrifice for Hashem. God forbid not to be disconnected from Hashem.
Is the motivation of a particular act the real truth of what you're doing? If you give charity and it's not a burden and you get pleasure out of it, is the act itself looked upon in a different light from someone who really can't afford to give it but gives it?
It's an excellent question. Thank you, because because we have to clarify. This test of Avram happened once in his life, this particular test. The overwhelming majority of Avram's life was he was the embodiment of love and kindness. And what this test teaches us is, of course, a person has to know what your natural tendencies are. Because those are good things. It's not something negative. If Hashem gives a person certain nature, enthusiasm, passions, talents, ability, loves, you have to utilize that for Hashem. If Hashem gave Avram the ability to love, he had a heart like a son, he gave him that ability, he utilized it to the maximum. That was his primary way of serving Hashem, by being loving and kind and compassionate. But the point is, that you can't be limited, that every once in a while you have to be ready to go beyond your nature. You have to be ready to go beyond your comfort zone. You have to be ready to... That's all I need. It's not something you have to do every moment and every day. But this tells me, this keeps it real, and this tells me that there's something deeper going on. That the fact that I'm utilizing all my natural loves and passions and tendencies, if Hashem gave you a love to do kindness, then you have to run with it. You have to develop that. You have to harp on it, and you have to push it all the way. But whatever you do, we should always be ready to go the extra mile. Be ready to stretch the envelope, you know, to push the envelope, to stretch our boundaries, to go beyond our comfort zone. How can a finite being connect with Hashem as infinite? If we only do things that we enjoy and it stops there, it's limited, then we're finite, we're limited. How in the world could we connect with Hashem as infinite? It's only when we do something that's an expression of something infinite. How could we express something infinite? When we do something that's a little uncomfortable, when we're able to go beyond our comfort zone, we're able to stretch, we're able to run that extra mile, to push ourselves to go beyond our nature, even a good nature. If it's just natural and it's just nature, it's limited, it's finite. To connect with the infinite, with godly, with Hashem, with something godly, we have to have that ability. And then when the majority of your time in your life you are pursuing and developing your passions and your loves, then you know that there's a godly element to it. So a person who loves giving tzedakah and it's beautiful, of course that's beautiful. We're not, God forbid, it's not about suppressing your positive, beautiful passions and loves, but don't be limited by it either. You have to be able to step out of it also, step out of our box. And then that keeps us grounded and keeps us real and keeps us plugged in and keeps us connected. And a very powerful point here, you know, the Baal Shem Tov once said, he said a soul comes down into this world for 70, 80 years just in order to do one favor to one Jew, one favor to one person. Your whole lifetime is all for one favor. Now, we're never told who that person is and what that favor is. Every time someone asks a favor, we better not blow it, because that could be the one purpose our soul came down into this world for. Can you imagine if we blew that? And it's a startling statement. It's a powerful statement. How can you make such a statement? I mean, everything is found in the Torah. Where do you find in the Torah such an idea, such a concept, that your whole world, your whole life is just for one moment? And the answer is obvious. The Akedah. The Akedah. Avraham was 137 years old. He recognized God from the age of 3 years old. He went through 9 tests. He was ready, thrown into the fire. He was ready to die himself. Test after test after test. He built up a following. Avram, he finally got an ear, a life of miracles and wonders. And what does Hashem ask of him at the age of 137? He's collecting Social Security for 60 years. And Hashem asks him, he says, please withstand this test. This is the final test. Because if you don't withstand the test, everything you've done till now is nothing. Could you imagine? A whole life lived, a life like Avram. And if he would not withstand this test, he would have failed this test. In other words, everything that happened to Avram till now was just a warm-up. Just a warm-up for this moment. That's why Judaism teaches you have to be sharp. You have to be on the ball. There's no retirement in Judaism. As long as we're breathing, as long as we're alive, we got to be 119 years old and 364 days. You got to be sharp. You got to be on the ball. This could be the moment that everything that happened till now is just a warm-up for this moment. I'm sure you remember, you know, when this intruder broke into the palace in London, the Queen of England, I think it was in the 80s. This is before they had Israeli technology. they immediately installed Israeli technology after that. And he broke into her chamber. And he was there with her for hours. Thank God he didn't harm her. And he says, I know your routine. I don't want you to change anything. He had a knife or a gun to her head. And the first thing she would do in the morning, she would call the one in charge of his security, which was a 4-star general, decorated general from World War II. And this was like such an honorable position, to be in charge of the queen of the Commonwealth. And he held the gun to his head, call him as usual, whatever time you call him, you know, and she would tell him, I'm ready for breakfast, and he would leave the breakfast outside the door. So she calls and chats naturally, normally, and then she says, please leave the breakfast, and don't forget the cigarettes. This was her SOS signal. And he's thinking to himself, cigarettes? The queen doesn't smoke, never smoked in her life. And, you know, he thought for a second, and then he dismissed it. Brought the breakfast. It wasn't until hours later till they found and they released her. And he was demoted. He lost his job. A decorated general. World War II. All of his life was a warm-up for that moment. And he was asleep. He was asleep on the job. He was sleeping on the job. He was the only one that was in the way that could have saved her. He could have raped her. He could have killed her. He could have done anything. And he wasn't sharp. He was like asleep. It's one moment. There's that one moment that our soul comes down into this world for that one moment. That one Jew that's asking you to do them that one favor. I don't know which one. So we gotta be on the ball. You gotta be on target. So Vayisa Avram is Einav. Avram lifted up his eyes. Vayar and he saw v'ne'ayil achar nechaz b'svach b'kan. He saw a ram. That's why we blow the shofar, the ram's horn. This happened on Rosh Hashanah to commemorate this episode of the Akedah. Right at the beginning of the year, we start the year with the Akedah, with the blowing of the shofar. Every morning, which is like a miniature Rosh Hashanah, the beginning of the day, we start out with the story of the Akedah. And Avram was looking. He was looking to do something. If we're not going to offer Isaac as a sacrifice, he wanted to offer a sacrifice, something. So he looked around and he saw that the ram got caught up, its horns got caught up in the bushes, in the thicket. So Vayelech Avram went, Vayikach Asa'ayil, he took the ram, Vayaleh Le'oila, and he offered it as a burnt offering, Tachas Benoi. Everything that he did to the ram, he said, he prayed to Hashem, it should be counted as if I've done it to my son. Because even though Avram was ready to make the ultimate sacrifice, to offer Yitzchak, but at the end, nothing happened. And that's wonderful. But you can't compare a person who's ready to sacrifice himself to a person who actually sacrifices himself. A person who's actually giving up his life for Hashem, the level of dedication, the level of devotion, the connection is, it's beyond. A person who's ready to do it, yes, you're close. But you can't compare when you're actually giving up your life for Hashem. So Avram didn't have the actual experience of offering his son. So by offering this animal, and not just substituting the animal, but he said, consider it as if I'm doing this to Isaac. And when he slaughtered the animals, if I'm slaughtering Isaac. He also transformed Isaac into like a sacrifice. And from that moment on, Isaac became as holy as a sacrifice. And that's why he wasn't allowed to leave the land of Israel. Isaac was the only one of the patriarchs who never stepped foot outside the land of Israel. Because he was like a holy sacrifice. He can't leave the land of Israel. He became holy. So he wanted to have that physical experience. Imagine how I would feel what I'm doing now to the ram as if I'm doing it to Isaac. And sprinkling the blood and the whole thing. The whole 9 yards. And Hashem accepted his prayer. Vayikra Avram, and Avram called Shema Mokem Ahu, the name of that place, Hashem Yireh, Hashem should see. And that's why Jerusalem is called Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim, because this was in Jerusalem, this is the Temple Mount. The Akedah was exactly, the altar was exactly where the altar was in the temple, exact same spot, on that spot. That's the spot that Avram offered, was ready to offer his son in the Akedah, and that's the spot that he offered this ram as a, not only as a substitute, but as if whatever he's doing to the ram, as if he's doing it to Yitzchak, transforming Yitzchak into a carbon, to a sacrifice.
Where is that spot? That spot.
That spot is the exact spot where the altar was in the temple, on the Temple Mount, where the altar was in the courtyard of the temple. Exact that same spot. In the Torah, in the 5 books of Moses, Jerusalem is referred to as Shlem. We learned earlier the king of Shlem in the Chumash. Shem was the king of Shlem. That was the name of Jerusalem. And here Avram called it Yira. Hashem should see. So Hashem combined the two names together, Yira Yerushalayim, Yira Shlema. Fear. Yira means also fear. Shlema, whole fear, complete fear and awe of Hashem. And that became the name in the Bible, in the prophets and the writings. Jerusalem is mentioned over 600 times. The name Yerushalayim. So Hashem Yira, Asher Ya'amer Hayoyim, it should be said today, starting today and every day afterwards, forever. Bahar Hashem Yira, in the mountain of Hashem, in this mountain Hashem will appear. Because this is the spot that a Jew would go to Jerusalem three times a year to do pilgrimage on the holidays of Sukkot, Passover, Pesach, and Shavuot, to see and to be seen. To see godliness, to see Hashem, Yira. And when you saw godliness, you were in awe of Hashem. Because they saw the miracles in the temple. They saw godliness. It was visual. They saw it. The miracles, unbelievable miracles, 10 miracles. And also Yerah was a place where Hashem appeared. The temple was the place where Hashem's Shekhinah is manifest, where Hashem appears, where godliness is manifest. And that's the quality of Yira. The quality, the difference between love and fear, awe. Love is usually comes from being distant. The more distant you are, the more you love, you yearn. When a child is separated from their parents, they yearn for their parents. The more separated you are, the more you love and you yearn, the more intense is the love. When you're standing right next to your parent is right there. You don't feel that love as acutely. With fear and awe, it's the exact opposite. The closer you are to the king or to this great person, you're in awe. If the king is right in front of you, this person, this awesome person is right in front of you, you're completely in awe. If you're far away and distant, it's more remote, abstract. It's not as acute. It's not acutely felt. It's not as intense. So the attribute of Yira is the attribute of that Hashem is really here. Hashem is right in front of me. And therefore, I'm in awe of Hashem. This is where Avram inherited and gave us. Avram is love and kindness, and he gives all of his descendants this ability of self-sacrifice, heroic self-sacrifice, that ability to total selflessness, total dedication to Hashem. Even a Jew doesn't feel any great love for Hashem. But when push comes to shove in a moment of truth, a Jew is so fearful of, God forbid, being disconnected from Hashem. It's not an option for us. For us, being disconnected from Hashem is worse than death. That is death. We can't live. Our life is, we have to be plugged in and connected. So Hashem is such a presence to us. Hashem is such a reality to us. That it's literally right in front of me, that it's not an option for me to be disconnected from Hashem. And that's the quality that we inherit from Avram. And Avram reached this level of fear, this level of awe. Hashem says, now I know that you fear me. And he named the Temple Mount, and he named the city Yira. And Yirah, that Hashem, we see Hashem, and we reach a level of fear of Hashem, and Yirah, Hashem appears to us and becomes clear to us. This quality we inherit now, this quality of ability, of total selflessness, total self-sacrifice, total connection with Hashem. Vayikra, we continue, Vayikra Malach Hashem al Avram, the angel of Hashem called out to Avram Shenis, a second time in Hashemayim, Vayomer, and he said, Binishbati, now I swear, Num Hashem. Since you did this, you did not hold back your son, your only son. So I swear to you, I will bless you, double bless. Blessing means an abundance. Hashem gives an abundance. And I will multiply your children like the stars in the heaven, like the sand on the beaches. The Yidr Zadacha and your children will inherit a Shar Oivav, the gateways of your enemies. It means you'll conquer your enemies. Gateways means if you conquer the gate, the entrance, then you conquer the whole city. If you're able to get in, then it's over. You have the whole city. So that's the part that's fortified the most, the gateway. You know, not to allow the enemy to enter. So Hashem promises your children will conquer the gateways of your enemies. You're going to conquer your enemies. Why was this a second call, a second response? This was in response to Avram offering the sacrifice. Like we find that after Noah left the ark, he also offered a sacrifice of thanksgiving from the animals. He took the animals from the ark, the kosher animals, and he offered a sacrifice on this same spot. He built an altar in that exact same spot where the altar, where the future altar in the temple was, in Jerusalem on the Temple Mount, the exact same spot. And as a result, God made an oath. He made a bris, a covenant, with a rainbow that he's never, ever going to destroy the world again. So Hashem responded to the sacrifice. So now that Avram offered a sacrifice, Hashem responded and sent the second angel to say that now Hashem is making an oath. Because all of these promises, there's nothing new in any of these promises. Hashem had already promised Avram earlier by the covenant. When Avram was 70 years old, he already promised him, you can have children, your children will be as numerous as the stars and as the sand and the beaches. What's new? What's new is Hashem swore. He made an oath. He committed himself totally. He swore that nothing is going to stand in the way of fulfilling this oath. And also, Hashem also added, before we promise, you're going to have many children as numerous as the stars, but not necessarily they're going to be your children. Now Hashem is promising v'yira zaracha, zaracha, your children. In other words, they're going to be obviously Jewish. They're going to be connected to you. Your children, your Jewish children who are following in your footsteps, who have the same faith and the same fire that you have and the same love and faith that you have, your children will be spread out throughout the whole world, will be as numerous as the stars and as the sand, the grains of sand on the beaches. All the nations of the world, they will bless their own children. That may you be like the Jewish people. May you be as wise as we find throughout history. You ever saw what Mark Twain, what he writes about the Jewish people? You ever read what Mark Twain writes about the Jewish people? Tolstoy, the Paul Johnsons of the world, righteous Gentiles who are just in awe of the Jewish people. They recognize what a blessing the Jewish people are. What an honor and privilege, what a blessing, what a godly people they are. Everything about them is godly. Their existence, their survival, their history. So they will bless their own children. May you be as wise as the Jewish people. Ekev, because, asher shamata bekoili, because you listen to me, you listen to my voice. Ekev is a numerical value of 172. So we find also at the end of Avram's life, it says Ekev, because Avram passed away at the age of 175. So it says for 172 years, Avram listened to God. Because up until the age of 3, Abraham was an idol worshiper. He was hidden away in a cave. He was raised by his parents. His father owned the Bloomingdales of idols. And Avram, till the age of 3, Avram was the first convert, the first Baal Teshuva. The age of 3, he came out of the cave and he started looking and wondering and thinking and questioning until he realized there's a God and he started worshiping God. So 172 years out of his 175-year life, he worshiped God. But that makes sense to say at the end of his life. Here, Avram was only 137. So where's the hint, Ekev, 172? Because this was the 10th and final test. After this, Hashem promised him no more tests. So therefore, we're guaranteed that the rest of his life, he's going to be righteous. Hashem is not going to test him anymore. He promised him. That's one of the oaths. He promised him, no more tests. You've passed with flying colors. There's nothing more to prove. So now we know for certain that the rest of his life, till 175, Avram will be righteous. So that you can say, Ekev Hashem, for the 172 years, Avram listened to Hashem, followed Hashem. And the fact that Avram didn't recognize Hashem the first 3 years, it wasn't any fault on his part. It wasn't any defect. On the contrary, that means that he came to Hashem naturally. And that's part of your growth. That's part of your learning. That's exactly what Hashem expects of us. That you grow, you're curious, you learn. That's part of our education. You can't start out with a finished product. That's the process of life. You start out very rough and very raw and very full of potential, but it takes time until you actualize that potential. Every child, we start out as children, before the age of bar mitzvah and bat mitzvah, we're not even responsible for ourselves. But that's part of the process. It's not a defect. It's not that there's anything wrong. That's part of the growing process. That's exactly the way it was intended to be. You have to learn, you have to grow, until you actualize all your potential. And that was the whole point of the test. The point of the test is Hashem doesn't need to know. Hashem knows what we're going to do. But the point of the test is, it's to actualize the potential. So let's conclude. Vayashar Avram al Narav. Avram returned to his youth, who he left behind, Yishmael and Eliezer, Vayikumu, and they stood up, Vayelchu Yachtav, they went together, Be'er Shava, Vayeshav Avram Be'er Shava. The reason it was called Be'er Shava, because for the oath, Shava comes from the word Shavua, the oath that Hashem just promised Avram. He made an oath. And we find Yitzchak called it Be'er Sheva, because of the seven wells. Avram dug wells and Yitzchak dug wells, 4 and 3. And between the two of them, they dug 7 wells in Be'er Sheva. In Be'er Sheva, so that's why he called it Sheva. Sheva is also 7. So here Avram just called it Shava, because at that time it was just Shava, just because of the oath. But later on, when Yitzchak dug the other wells, now you had altogether 7 wells. So Sheva also comes from the word Shavua and 7. So that's why today we call it Be'er Sheva. You don't say Be'er Shava. Today we say Be'er Sheva. But that's where he returned. He returned to Be'er Sheva. So we concluded the Akedah. It's so fascinating. Every morning we can't get over what happened. It's one of the most astounding things that ever happened in history, in human history, in Jewish history. This is what made Avram the first Jew. And this is where we inherit our Jewishness from. And every day we recite the story. And now, hopefully, that we learned it, you'll be able to recite it, every word, every sentence, be able to understand it and appreciate it and really walk away inspired. That's the point, why we read the story.
It was truly enlightening for me, the Akedah. I didn't realize it said every morning.
Every morning.
Every morning. Is that the first thing that's said every morning?
It's almost right in the beginning of the prayer, right? Almost at the beginning. Mm-hmm.